Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 3rd edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. Our panelists today include Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities from Watseka, Illinois. From right here in Champaign County, Greg Johnson of the Andersons. And Matt Bennett is with us. He's with Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's begin with a list, as we usually do, of things that we should talk about for the day. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think after seeing the estimate that I saw earlier this morning on corn yield from Inform, I definitely want to get everyone's opinion and give my own, I guess, as far as corn yield goes. And then, the other thing would be talking about how this Eastern Corn Belt is handling this late season stress and what it's going to mean to especially late soybean yields, this fall, because I do think there'll be an impact there.
Mike Zuzulo?
I think commodity investor interest heading into both USDA and the Federal Reserve is going to be the top of the list for me, Todd, probably all the way into Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays.
Merrill Crowley.
Well, I'd like to talk about $8 corn and $17 beans, but I don't think that's going to happen. So let's take a look at how the current China situation and the debt situation in U.S. may be affecting current prices.
We'd like you to talk at least about $5 corn or $6 corn and $12 beans, but we'll go with 8 and 17. Greg Johnson.
I think we probably should talk about farmer marketing and how little the farmers have marketed and whether they should do what they did last year, wait and hope, and see if that works again this year.
Let's start there.
Well, we are under 20% bought, which is about where we were last year at this time, and farmers didn't like the sub $4 prices last year. Dease corn got all the way down to 321 on October 1st and then rallied up to the $4 level by Christmas time. And I think farmers are hoping for that again this year.
Is that the right thing to do?
Oh, gosh. I wish I knew whether it was the right thing to do. But I think most of the guys that have been in the presentations that I've been giving have been nodding their heads in approval whenever I've been talking about maybe being more in agreement with like a pro farmer 164.3 or under. Then the USDA is 168.8. Now, let's just say that you agree with the 164.3, then I think you're going to have some harvest data, some verification that it actually is going to be smaller than the USDA before we're ever going to get some sort of a rally effort. But the problem, as in the way the market's acting today, is where we're going to rally from.
You mentioned that Informa released its numbers, its next September crop production figures on Thursday morning. That's today as we record. I've been pretty busy here at the Farm Progress Show. Haven't had a chance to see them. What did those numbers look like?
Well, if you looked at the USDA number in a mirror, that's what it would look like. It was 168.8.
And that's not a number, I take it, that you agree with?
I'd say that's a pretty safe estimate, yeah. I'm definitely under that. After going on the Pro Farmer Crop Tour here a couple weeks ago, I was expecting to see pristine conditions. And I think I was in on maybe 60 samples between South Dakota, North Dakota, irrigated and dry land. Iowa, we started in southern Iowa and moved our way up through northern Iowa and over to Rochester. Out of 60 samples, I believe I had six that were over 200. And I was expecting a lot more than that.
Mike Zuzulo, you live in that part of the world. I suspect you have traveled part of that northwestern corner of Kansas, certainly where you live, the northeastern corner of Missouri, and the Four Corners area, relatively speaking, of Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, and Kansas. Is it as rough as people say, and does it look? Have you traveled through the Watseka area to know what that looks like, and how comparable are the two?
I'll put it to you in the Farm Progress Show mindset, Todd. The producers here at Farm Progress are very similar to the producers that I know back in the northeast Kansas area in that they think it's going to be an average crop or maybe above average crop. But is it a crop that takes ahead and pushes over what Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and these other states that are suffering, can you push that national yield over the top and have these states offset it, these western states offset it? And this goes back to your earlier question that Greg kind of started off. I do think producers are right to not want to sell too aggressively in corn, especially before the September report, especially before the Federal Reserve makes its decision in mid-September. The corn has been hammered by beans. It's been hammered by wheat. It's been hammered by the dollar. It's just not trading fundamentals of supply-demand, in my opinion. And so what do you have to risk right now by holding off on your corn sales, especially given that producers this year at the Farm Progress Show have been completely the opposite of where they were last year at this time? Big yields, big test weights, and that's what it ended up being.
It is an east and a west division. It has been all year. Alan Brugler pointed out to us, Greg Johnson, on our programs this week from the Farm Progress Show, that the bottom two tiers of county in Minnesota produce more corn than the state of Ohio does. Of course, the Andersons have facilities in both places, on home state of Ohio, of course. Have you folks talked very much about that and what it really might mean?
Yes, we have. We have elevators in Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan, as well as other states. But those three states are really hurting. Indiana specifically is probably the worst. We have managers there that are projecting yields similar to what they saw in the drought year of 2012, basically a half a crop. And it's so variable that some areas are okay, but other areas are completely zero, and those zeros really bring the average down. So they are not looking for very good yields at all out of Indiana. Slightly better in Ohio, but still way below average.
And on the eastern, or rather western, side of your reach?
Much better. Nebraska's probably not as good as what USDA is saying, but it's better than average. We've got elevators and ethanol plants in Iowa. Same thing there. Much, much better than average, but probably not the record type of numbers that USDA is using for those states.
Let me bring you back to the home area in Champaign County. How much of an expansion of your draw do you suppose you will need to keep the elevator filled for the year?
Well, you know, we think that our draw territory to the south and west of Champaign is good, very good, in fact. So that's where we're going to have to concentrate our efforts on. Unfortunately, we also draw from the north and the east, and those are the areas that are variable to way below average. And, there's going to be plenty of storage space for the farmers in those areas, so they're probably not going to need to bring a lot of grain to town in the fall from the east or to the north. That's why we're going to concentrate on the south and the west.
So you're going to concentrate to get corn coming in from those sides. That leaves your farmers in Watsika area with probably enough storage to put things away, whatever they might be able to handle. What do they do with that crop once they put it away?
Well, I think if they put it away, they can look to, take advantage of basis. I think they're going to be trying to pull basis up to help our area and bring corn in from the better producing areas. The problem is going to be is how good a quality is that corn going to be? Because you can bring, you can put it in your bin, you can dry it down. I think if you wait till into like the April, May time period, you're going to have problems with the storing of it. And then farther in the year you wait, I have known that when you have some quality problems, elevators tend to dock a little harder as they move into June and July. And they're going to dock a little harder if they're paying a better basis. So my plan would be if you have the storage on the farm, put it in there, store it, take advantage of your basis improvement, and then move it into town and replace it with something on the futures.
Is this the right thing to do? You operate in an elevator. The expectations, at least for those areas where they have really out-of-condition corn when it comes off of the field, that it's not in very good shape, that they, if they do store it on the farm, to move it fairly quickly and replace it on paper in some form.
Yeah, and I have nothing to disagree with there. I think another thing to add to it, if you will, is there's a lot of old crop stocks that are in really pretty decent shape. And so, if I was going to be moving it, I would probably be moving it right away. I think, from a basis standpoint, it's going to be pretty interesting because, as Greg was indicating, there's some areas that are much better, relatively speaking, than others. How that's going to affect basis, I think in some places, basis is probably going to be improved a little bit, which should wear off on other areas. If we continue this downward trend, I would assume basis isn't going to get near as wide as what I thought it might maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mike, is there any reason to believe that we have concern over demand for corn? I mean, ethanol is plateaued but level. You've got livestock, which appears to be at least growing, unless you're worried about avian flu in the eastern United States in particular.
Yeah, I mean, globally, I think, and it's the feed wheat, Todd. I think that if I could pick one thing that beats this corn market up day in and day out, if it's not the outside markets, and the dollar's included in this, and so it is part of the outside markets as well, but it's the feed wheat. And when Egypt is buying wheat at $188 a ton, and it's $30 lower than it was a month ago when Algeria bought some this week, the corn bull goes back into the hole and waits, you know, for the greener pastures. I think that's really as simple as it gets at this point as far as where's the demand hit to the corn right now. But I don't think it's coming from China. I don't think it's coming from Ukraine. I don't think it'll come from Argentina. I actually think that the supply side of those three countries will be supportive to the corn in the next 6 months because they're going to tighten their supplies up there between weather and smaller crops.
Let's switch commodities to soybeans at this point. China has been a big problem to some extent for corn, but mostly for soybeans. Is there any bright spot for the export market from the United States to China? USDA has not changed it yet, but September WASDE has not been released.
A sub-40 bushel yield in the United States or a terrific El Nino in South America, that would turn the U.S. export market for soybeans into a much sharper and competitive market. But I don't think that the livestock demand and the meal market can be as strong as it's been the last 2 years and support the soybeans. And so we actually need the export market more in soy than we have in the last couple, 3 years.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think, you know, one thing that's been a good thing for me is seeing that, you know, our beans are competitive farther out, a couple, 3 months out, versus South American beans. And I think, you know, when you're running into a harvest with kind of the size of a Brazilian crop going into our harvest, it's a bit of an issue. But I think moving forward, the Chinese have been very slow, very lackluster on purchases. And in the last couple of weeks, it's been kind of a welcome sign to see what they've booked for this upcoming year. There really hasn't been enough incentive, in my opinion, for them to get too awfully excited. And when we're talking about China, you know, I guess everyone keeps talking about them cooling off their economy, and I understand that they're going to need to. But one way that they're not going to be able to do it, in my opinion, is by backing off of their purchases of some of the products that we want to see them purchase, like soybean meal and corn. And bottom line is you still got to feed your people when you've got that many miles to feed.
What do you suppose the chance of $7 in front for soybeans might be?
A lot better than what previously thought, first of all. Second of all, if we got a general soaking rain in the eastern Corn Belt soon, it would help significantly. But I don't think people are understanding just how much this heat is affecting soybean yields, especially your fuller season varieties in the eastern Corn Belt that haven't had a rain in 3 weeks. And we're in the midst of a five-day period when it's 90 degrees every day. We're taking the top end off this eastern Corn Belt soybean yield, but yet on the west side, they've had more than enough moisture. So again, we've got two completely different situations. It's going to be very interesting to see how that plays out.
$7 beans look like technically they're in the cards, especially when you look at the corn soybean ratio. So either the beans have got to come down or the corn's got to go up.
A division again now in the soybeans. It actually looks like he may be very well right that Matt has been thinking about what the soybean crop looks on both sides of the Mississippi River.
Yeah, I would say that the yield is probably a little too high, and I also think the acreage number may be a little too high, but that won't be addressed until the October USDA report. But if you get down to $8 beans, there's always a chance they can go to $7. The markets do overreact, but at $8 beans, I would much rather be a buyer and wait for something to happen as opposed to be selling too many beans at $8 hoping for $7. At $8, I think we're getting down close to the bottom.
What's a producer do? He brings it across the scale. He's going to put it in your elevator. What are his options?
He can either sell it and buy back options or futures on the board. He can put it on a basis contract, which is basically the same thing as selling the corn and buying back futures. He can do some minimum maximum type contracts, or he can put it on DP or storage. So he's got several choices, but most of those only work if the market goes up. So if he doesn't sell, he's basically counting on the market to rebound post-harvest.
And do you think with soybeans that's a possibility within, what, a 3 to 5 week time frame?
It may happen in October. That's when it happened last year. We had the big rally, and I think by the time October rolls around, we'll have some actual harvest reports. The October 11th, 12th, whatever the USDA report day is, we should incorporate the FSA acreage data. So we should have a better acreage number and a better yield number. And as Matt said, if the yields are too high and the acres are too high, all of a sudden every million acres is 80 million bushels. And so a 450 million bushel carryout may only be 350 million bushel carryout, and that makes a big difference.
I'd have to look and see what date that is, but it's either the 9th, 10th, 11th, or 12th. One of those 4 days, it's always one of those 4 days of the month, because that gives you 2 days as an option on a Friday or a Monday, even if the middle days are the middle 2 days. Okay, so where do we stand from each of you at this point? What are the best options producers have for corn, if they haven't marketed, and for soybeans, which they probably have not marketed?
So you're talking all new crop.
All new crop.
Because obviously a lot of guys have still got old crop corn. But I think when you're talking new crop, in my opinion on corn, I want to be a little more patient. Again, I think if a guy agrees with my rationale that this corn yield is too high, then I think that you're going to have to be patient. You're going to have to get some verification of that. As we move forward, you know, using the same logic that Greg was just using, hey, you know what, if we would just say, for ease of figuring, 80 million harvested acres of corn, you know, and say we drop 5 bushels, that's 400 million we're taking out of the mix. And I know that's holding demand constant, but whenever corn has continued to go down here recently, I'm going to have a hard time saying that demand is going to go away as well as we lower price. So to me, I think you got to be a little bit patient with the corn market. As far as soybeans go, it's a really tough one. A lot of producers are very close to break even, both on corn and beans. But on beans, I've had a lot of guys tell me that they're just hoping they can hold it together. If you know that your beans are good enough that you can break even or make money, then I don't know that I would be a big fan of storing all of them by any means, but I would probably split it up. And those that I went ahead and sold at harvest, I'd probably buy a cheap call option just to take a look.
Mike Zuzalo?
To advance, you know, what Matt was just talking about, what kind of confirmation can you find? And I think it goes back to that 357.5 low in December corn, Todd. My ideal situation for new crop corn would be, we come through the September report, we come through the Federal Reserve meeting in the 16th, 17th of September, the dollar does no more than a sideways trading range, that 357.5 low in December corn's tested, it confirms a double bottom, and all of a sudden the investor market comes back in and wants to charge this thing up heading into the October, November reports, because as Greg said, that's probably the most likely scenario, and history would suggest that too. It's very hard to get a low in October and November. In fact, you don't get a low hardly at all in October, November. June, July, and December are like 70% of the lows in lead month corn in the last 15 years. So that's my take on the corn. Beans, to me, it gets a little more simple. If you got to make room for corn on farm, do it. Sell the beans off the combine. Look for an El Nino rally December, January, and buy it back. I've had much better experience in my time as a broker buying beans and being right than buying corn and being right, because those calls do much better because of the excitement in those beans and the speculators on the board of trade.
Okay, we're probably looking from whatever low we get, roughly a 20% rebound. That's what we've seen in the last five rebounds we've had since 2012. So if you're looking for something like that, wherever you find your low, from our lows now, it's about $1.60 in beans and something like 70-some cents in corn. So, you know, an option will work for that. My thought pattern is, if you can store it at home, then I would store it. I would look to do the basis play, look to try to pick up carry in the corn. And then I would get rid of it. You guys are going to need money, and if they need money, then you can get rid of it, re-own it back on the board. I mean, it's no different having 10,000 bushel on the board versus 10,000 bushel in the bin. I'm not wanting a bottom pick here. I just, you know, that's something that I want to see a bottom, see it move up. But if that's all you want to do is transfer ownership, transfer it to the board. You can use such a small amount of money to control the same bushels and have the other money for whatever else you need it for.
From a farmer's point of view, there's a difference in the corn and the bean market, and that's in the futures carry and the cash carry. July 2016 corn futures are trading about 23 to 25 cents higher than December futures, whereas July beans are only trading 10 cents higher than November futures. So if a farmer has bin storage available, he can put that corn in the bin and pick up 23 cent futures carry, plus he's going to pick up at least 10 to 15 cents in basis carry, basis improvement. So those bins are going to be worth 30 cents a bushel to him for corn. For beans, maybe only 10, 15 cents. So the market right now knows there's plenty of beans, and they're not really willing to pay a premium for farmers to store beans, but they are for corn. So if you're a farmer and you think there's going to have a post-harvest rally, then put the corn in the bin. But when you get ready to sell, look to sell those deferred months. Look to sell March, May, and July instead of the nearby December. Just the opposite on soybeans. If we get any kind of a rally, you may want to sell the nearby, get rid of the cash beans, keep that storage for your corn.
Any final word from each of you? We'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
Well, I think going into harvest, obviously, these prices aren't what we are all hoping for. Moving through this, I think patience is going to be key. And just, you know what, we may have to be a little bit more okay with base hits instead of expecting home runs this year, because they probably aren't going to happen.
Matt Bennett, of course, is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting from Atchison, Kansas.
China is the buzzword right now, Todd. When they come back from their holiday, it's going to be the buzzword again. You asked me a question many months ago if this was a repeat of 97-98, and it was interesting. I did some figuring and some research. Foreign exchange reserves from the emerging market countries, including China, is $4 trillion roughly right now. It was a half a trillion in 1998. They buy their own debt nowadays because they learned from 97-98. So I don't see China as a train wreck economically. Is their financial market a wreck? Sure, but they're correcting that as well. But I think globally, we don't have to worry about China's consumption down the road here, unless the United States, Europe, and Japan soften and China loses its major consumers.
Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watsika.
Well, I think with the market the way it is, get that plan put together. Be willing and be able to act when the prices get there. You know, if you just sit there and sit back and wait for prices to move up or down, it could hit a price just like it did in July, and then the opportunity's gone.
And finally, Greg Johnson of the Andersons.
I think the market, the traders, and the government reports do a pretty good job most years of predicting the supply of the crop. The one year where they didn't was 1997, the year that the Mississippi River flooded, that we had two, and we haven't had too many wet years, but that was one, and this might be the second one. In that year, the market went down through the spring, down through the summer, did not rally until the October report. It may be very similar this year. The market thinks that rain makes grain, and most years it does, but there is such a thing as too much rain, and we may see an adjustment both in yield and acres when that October report comes out. So I think if we've held on this long, I think, sure, there's a little bit more downside possibly, but I think let's wait for the October report and see what the acres and yield are at that point.
Our thanks to our panelists. This edition of Commodity Week for the third day of September was recorded Thursday of the Farm Progress Show. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There we post all of our agricultural programming in its entirety. Have a good weekend.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.